Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.
Different skulls, hot skulls, different skulls, different skulls. Let's make this a beautiful.
Welcome to Farced Perspective, a podcast about the last 50 years of comedy. On key anniversaries, we look back and ask, what was innovative material then? What continues to be successful now? And what have people thought about it along the way?
I'm Pete.
I'm Ben.
And welcome to The Henson Perspective, where we talk about an episode of The Muppet Show 45 years after its original New York City air date. In this case, we're talking about the final episode of the second season, guest starring Cloris Leachman. This is the 24th production episode, and it's the 24th airing in the U.S., which makes it a bingo.
Hell yeah.
One of three that we had this season. And it originally aired on May 22nd, 1978, after having been filmed back in December of 77. It was not the last filmed, despite being the last production episode, because of Muppet logic. This was an episode that made me think of Star Trek, and not just because it had a centerpiece of Pigs in Space, but also because while doing a Star Trek Deep Space Nine rewatch these last couple years during some online pandemic, quote, book groups where we would watch television shows together, it was very clear that when you're on a show like Star Trek, you tend to say the same kind of techno babble, and you have to put on the same damn prosthetic forehead for 3 hours in the morning. And every so often, you want to give your actors a chance to show that they're not this narrow thing. And so you have a time travel episode, or you have a
holodeck episode.
Exactly. You have an episode where you're taken over by an alien being and your personalities get swapped. Much like Buffy, similarly, they would have an amulet goes off and everyone goes young or forgets their memory. And so it gives the actors a chance to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
This is an episode where we have a rundown of a bunch of standard Muppet Show sketches and tropes, but they're done by different people.
Mm-hmm.
They're done with different voices doing the pre-established roles. And it's a chance for the puppeteers and the actors to switch it up and have a fun time playing with the conventions of the show, which for them probably has gotten a little samey.
Ben, I have one little issue with what you just said.
Okay.
Which is, we learned last week that there's very rarely puppeteers on the Muppet Show. So what are you talking about, the puppeteers switching things up?
Let me rephrase.
Okay, thank you.
The Muppets.
Okay.
Who are in and of themselves beings.
Right. Okay, I follow.
Got to change their voices.
Uh-huh.
Or have guest pig Muppets come in and play their parts for them while they still got paid scale for doing almost nothing?
Yes, 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 yes. But certain Muppets still uncredited.
Yeah, despite the fact that one of them once again had a prominent vocal part that would have normally been voiced by somebody else who does receive credit every episode. Yeah, sure knows that. Justice for Louise Gold.
Next season, Ben.
Next season. Anything else broadly about the episode we want to talk about before we get into the trivia section?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I was constrained from doing any research about Cloris Leachman, despite having several moments where I was being like, oh yeah, I'll look up this because I bet it connects to her. And then I was like, no, I can't. I can't. So I may know one or two things about Cloris Leachman from having been a person who watched films from the 70s. But I don't know what you think I and our listeners should know about Cloris Leachman. So why don't we get to those questions?
Let's do it. Question number one. I love to talk about awards, so let's just go out the gate
Okay. Talking
about some of the awards that Cloris Leachman has been nominated for.
Mm-hmm.
Which of the following actresses has more Emmy nominations than Cloris Leachman? A. Julia Louis-Dreyfus. B. Mary Tyler Moore. C. Susan Lucci. D. All of the above. E. None of the above.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Unfortunately, no. The correct answer is none of the above. Mm. Cloris Leachman is the most nominated actress in the history of the Emmys.
Okay.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus is hot on her heels. They both have 8 wins, which is also the most number of wins. Mm. But Cloris Leachman has 22 nominations to Julia Louis-Dreyfus's 21. Mary Tyler Moore has 7 wins with 15 nominations, so her win percentage is better than either of them. And Susan Lucci has 21 Daytime Emmy nominations. Cloris also won 1 Daytime Emmy as well, so she technically has 9 Emmys, 8 Primetime, 1 Daytime. She also has 1 Golden Globe and 1 Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in The Last Picture Show. Where the story goes with that scene that she won for, it was filmed in 1 take with no rehearsal, and after the take she said to director Peter Bogdanovich, "I can do better," and he said, "No you can't, you just won the Oscar."
Wow.
So they only did it once. Question 2. While we're talking about Emmys, there's another impressive Emmy statistic for Cloris Leachman. She is one of only 3 people to win Emmys in the 3 genres: comedy, drama, and limited series / TV movie. Of the following people...
The 3 genres we all are familiar
with.
The 3 masks in classic Greek theater.
Comedy,
drama, and limited series.
/ TV movie. That one is someone smiling while they're crying because they're doing a TV movie.
And cut in half because it's only limited.
Of the following people, who is the person who has not also achieved this honor? A. Allison Janney. B. Edward Asner. Or C. Uzo Aduba.
Asner.
Incorrect. The correct answer is Allison Janney. Edward Asner was the first person to achieve the honor. Cloris Leachman was the second. Uzo Aduba, most recent in 2020. Question number 3. One of Cloris's most famous roles is as Frau Bucher. Thank you. In Young Frankenstein. And in 2007, Mel Brooks started a Broadway revival of it. Cloris auditioned to reprise the role, but Andrea Martin got it instead. At the time, Brooks joked that Leachman, who was 81, which was also the same age as Mel Brooks, was too old for the role, and he said, quote, "We don't want her to die on stage." However, after seeing Cloris in what project made Mel Brooks change his mind and offer it to Cloris when Martin's replacement, Beth Level, was leaving? Was it A, Dancing with the Stars, B, Malcolm in the Middle, or C, Raising Hope?
C.
No, it was Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Cloris Leachman was 82 when Dancing with the Stars was on. She's the oldest person to ever have performed on it, and she came in 7th on her season. But unfortunately, the production for Young Frankenstein ended before this could actually happen, so she never actually got to reprise the role. Cloris did also receive Emmy nominations for both Malcolm in the Middle and Raising Hope, and she won twice for Malcolm in the Middle and was nominated 6 times for that. Question 4. Despite her impressive singing in this episode, I could not find much information on her singing talents, how she was trained, all that other stuff. The only information I could find was that she did do some Broadway musicals. She appeared in The Day Before Spring in 1953, Wonderful Town in 1977, and Showboat in 1993. But her biggest Broadway musical is one that she was an understudy for in 1949. Was she an understudy for a role in A, Carousel, B, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, or C, South Pacific?
B.
She was the understudy for the role of Nellie Forbush in the original cast of South Pacific. She was also supposed to be the originator of Abigail Williams in Arthur Miller's The Crucible. But before the show's Broadway debut on the very important date of January 22nd, 1953, Cloris left the production the day before previews. The only reference I could find in any of my research regarding opera was that in college she was friends with Hollywood Square's center square Paul Lynde. And Lynde would come over to her dorm and put on operas with Cloris and actress Charlotte Ray, who Cloris would later replace on The Facts of Life, both of them singing backup for him. For my final question of the season, I'm going to give Ben a taste of his own medicine and subject Ben to a round of 6 degrees of Jim Henson.
Mm.
But, in a little Pete twist, make it a little unfair.
Because you're already winning this round.
Yeah. I'm going to give Ben 3 of the top 4 of Cloris Leachman's credits on IMDb and give him some of the other cast members in those movies. He will then have 60 seconds to get from Cloris Leachman to Jim Henson using any of those cast members or anyone else he might know is in those movies. If after 60 seconds he is unable to connect them, for half of a point, I will give him 20 more seconds and the 4th film. Ben, your 3 movies are The Last Picture Show, starring Timothy Bottoms, Jeff Bridges, Sybil Shepherd, and Ellen Burstyn. The Croods, starring Nicolas Cage, Ryan Reynolds, Emma Stone, and Catherine Keener. And Spanglish, starring Adam Sandler, Taya Leone, Paz Vega, and Sarah Steele. Using those, or anyone else that you know of in those movies, you have 60 seconds. Your time begins now.
Jeff Bridges is in Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr., who's in Avengers Endgame with Michelle Pfeiffer, who's in Into the Night with Jim Henson.
I hate you. 12.5 seconds.
It's almost like the many clues that I've given you over the last 48 episodes, okay, over the last 24 episodes that I've been in charge of the trivia, have given me a little bit of practice for making connections.
Which is why I was unwilling to give you her
the fourth
credit.
One, which was either High Anxiety or Young Frankenstein.
It was Young Frankenstein. Which is maybe the only one that I've finally learned. So I knew if I gave it to you, just go, Mel Brooks, done.
Yep.
You chose Jeff Bridges. Mm-hmm. Here are some of the ones that I found.
Yeah, please. If Sarah Steele's one of them, I'm very interested.
She wasn't, because I just threw that in because it was fun.
It was fun.
The fastest I found was Adam Sandler is in Mixed Nuts with Steve Martin.
Mm.
Nicolas Cage is in The Cotton Club with Gregory Hines. Also, Nicolas Cage is in the adaptation with Chris Cooper, who was in the 2011 The Muppets.
With the other Muppet performers exactly. Who are in the Muppet movies with.
Yep. Ryan Reynolds was in The Hitman's Bodyguard and the sequel with Samuel L. Jackson, who was in Star Wars Episode II, Send in the Clones.
They're already here.
Exactly. Emma Stone was in Easy A with Stanley Tucci, who was in Road to Perdition with Daniel Craig.
That's a good one. I thought I should probably have a good answer for Emma Stone, and I didn't. So that's a good one to remember.
Yeah, I'm sure there are way more connections there, too. But I was like,
yeah, because Stanley Tucci has been in a lot.
Yes.
It's easy to find a touch of the Tucci.
You gotta find the touch of the Tucci. So yeah, Cloris Leachman, one of the other statistics that I saw many, many times was she was on television for 8 decades.
Mm.
1948 was her first television credit, and her last television credit was in 2022 on American Gods.
In the 40s and the 50s, were there any shows she was on that our listeners might have some resonance with?
No.
Fair enough.
Not until the Mary Tyler Moore Show,
yeah.
And then her spinoff, Phyllis. That's when she really broke big, which also, both of those shows ended in 1977. Mm. Here we are, filming in December of 1977. She had time on her hands, finally. She wasn't filming two shows on a weekly basis.
Whereas people in our immediate circle may know Cloris Leachman best from being part of a rhyme that is frequently brought out on Pistol Shrimps Radio, where me and Cloris Leachman are drinking barley pops on a censorable leap.
Don't think I didn't consider starting every question with me and Cloris Leachman or someone in Cloris Leachman, but quickly discovered I was not able to do that. But yeah, she's been around. Or she was around forever. She unfortunately passed away in January of 2022.
I think that's right.
I found it difficult to write questions because she's so prolific. And
yeah, you knew that I would know things about Mary Tyler Moore, that I would know things about Young Frankenstein, that I would know things about Last Picture Show, that these are things for which she is legendary and deservedly so.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there are plenty of people who watched her on Dancing with the Stars, which was a highly popular show, and didn't necessarily go back and see her when she wasn't 82.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that this show and other appearances might encourage people to do that.
There were too many credits because I wanted to do a question about how many roles she had where she was known as mother or mom or, and then later in her career, meemaw, grandma. That was the last 40 years of her career, basically.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to do a deep dive into that because that's such a narrative for actresses of a certain age where they tend to talk about the fact of, I just get scripts sent to me that are mom or are grandma when you hit a certain level. And I don't mean to diminish the experience of professional actresses, but I think it takes a particular kind of actor to say, this is written as a grandma, but I bet I can do something with it. And particularly in television, television will then say, oh, actually, we have a godsend here. Let's make this more about the lucky talent that we have instead mm-hmm. of this may have been a space filler part, but now it's actually something we're going to make a focus of episodes.
Yeah, we have an Academy Award winning actress in the roles.
Yeah.
I don't have the quote written down, so I'm going to paraphrase it, but Cloris Leachman did say that in every dramatic role, she tries to put some comedy in it. Mm-hmm. And in every comedic role, she tries to add some drama to it.
And I think that's very clear here in her performance. She's doing things big and subtle in every scene that she's in. And it's only five scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she's never not doing both deliberate actorly choices, but also going big in order to clearly indicate that this is a satirical or a broad comedic performance.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to talk about before we jump into the episode itself is another interesting thing she said about roles that she took that weren't so flattering to her as a person.
Mm.
Is she said that she loved going on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson after those roles to then be herself. So that way the audience would see, this is who I am. Yeah. Don't associate me with that monster. And I think this episode shows that.
So I've talked a little bit about what I thought she brought to her performances, but we're not going to be able to talk about how you rank her and how many people you may or may not have to move in your overall rankings, depending on where she falls, until we talk about her scenes. And we have already decided that everything is too intermingled in this particular sketch to extract her scenes for separate conversation.
Yeah, this is maybe the most impossible episode we've ever had to do that with.
It's very, very unified. So let us get into talking about the segments themselves.
We start with the cold open. Scooter busts in. There's a picture of Link and Piggy from Pigs in Space next to the door. He says, 15 seconds to curtain.
And Cloris says, okay, Scooter. So we're moving away from thank you, away from our possible connections to thank you, 15. But she does want to thank him for the lunch. And she says that she hopes he remembered that she doesn't eat meat of any kind. Because meat and Cloris Leachman do not get along, Hope Scooter knows.
Am I going to have to count those in my statistics?
No.
I thought this was weird because she mentions that she's vegetarian two different ways in a short time frame.
Hope he remembered that I don't eat meat of any kind.
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah.
And you'll be happy to know that I am a vegetarian.
It's a little ham-fisted.
I don't think Cloris would use that language.
I think the episode would.
Yeah. But it makes me wonder if in 1978, vegetarianism is still so unpopular and not widely considered as
an acceptable lifestyle choice.
Yeah, that saying the word vegetarian, people would be like, what does that mean?
I do think that vegetarianism in the 70s was still looked on as fringe behavior instead of something that could be just a normal thing that people did.
So yeah, as soon as she mentions that she's a vegetarian, a bunch of Muppets rush the stage. Cows, pigs, a duck, and a goat.
And a lobster.
I didn't notice the lobster.
Yep. They really looked at their archives of past pre-made Muppets and said, which of these could be eaten by somebody?
Huh. And they're very happy. And then she takes the, what's the platter, the top of the platter?
I just called it a lid.
Yeah, it has a word. I
didn't look it up, but I thought, I had the same thought, that that has a name.
Yeah, in my notes I said plinth, but I know it's not a plinth.
Whereas to me it's the reverse of a tureen.
Yep. Well, we're not going to look it up, so take that, listeners. Scream at us.
Hi, Future Ben here. One of the few benefits about editing this many months in the future is that I can now recall that that is called a cloche, or cloche. A bell-shaped dome that goes over food is a cloche.
And she takes the lid off the silver serving tray.
And it reveals a bunch of my favorite cute fruits and veggie Muppets.
We have a melon, grapes, a tomato, asparagus, and a banana. And something that I thought was a cabbage, but later in Vegetarian's Hospital will be introduced as a lettuce.
And they boo and hiss, Cloris.
As we cut to the opening theme.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah?
Scooter gave her 15 seconds. Cuts to curtain at 25 seconds.
I'm not surprised.
Unacceptable. I'm not surprised that what happens in this episode happens, because clearly the pigs don't like it.
They're already out for justice.
Yeah, as they should be.
I'm not surprised because it was a wordy scene.
Yeah.
It had a lot of things going on. It had two different reveals. Doesn't surprise me that that would take longer than 15 seconds.
So say 25 seconds. hopefully this is the last time I have to complain about this. I have a feeling it's not.
Eventually, we'll start having our guest stars show up at the back door with pops in the ticket booth letting them in.
Mm.
I don't think that's a third season trope. I think that's a fourth season trope. So maybe we'll have more of this. We'll find out.
So as the curtain rises, opening happens as normal. Statler and Waldorf have their segment, and Waldorf says, "Quit while you're ahead."
Statler nods vigorously.
Gonzo blows on the trumpet, and the wiki listed as red smoke. It looked very orangey to me.
I wrote down red smoke, and then because smoke has been one of the openings that you've been the most irritated with,
mm-hmm.
I went back through all the openings in order to see what other smokes there had been.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve Martin had green smoke, which he then commented upon. Madeline Kahn had yellow smoke. Dom DeLuise had orange smoke. And Lou Rawls had the same green smoke that was in the Steve Martin episode. Turns out this is the same orange smoke that's in the Dom DeLuise episode. And it starts off looking orange, and then it looks very red by the end of it. This episode has a squawk of the trumpet with a sort of foghorn sound underneath. In the Dom DeLuise episode, there's a two-tone note. It goes doot-doot, like a ship's horn, but not like a foghorn. So they've changed the sound as to trick us into thinking that it's different and used a color smoke that is in between two colors.
But that green one, if I remember rightly, one of them, Gonzo says something and one of them, he doesn't.
He's cut off before he has a chance to say it.
Again, to make us think that it's different. It's not different. Smarter than you, Muppet Show.
The other thing that I learned by going back through all the openings is that the Gonzo where the trumpet flies out of his hands that I claimed was first season Gonzo is the only time that that different Gonzo puppet is used.
Okay.
In all the other openings, it is second season Gonzo. And so I was wrong to think, wait, these had all been filmed at the beginning before they changed the puppet. For some reason, they used a different puppet for that one shot.
If only we liked wildly speculating, we might be able to speculate on why this is the case, but we don't like to do that here.
No. We make to stay within our bounds. We don't punch up jokes by professional writers.
Nope.
We don't say we wish things could be better, and we don't just make up false narratives as to why things happened.
We would never do any of those things.
As we go to the curtain, Kermit comes out saying that we're going to love the show because our guest is, and I found this an interesting phrase, the star of television and film, Miss Cloris Leachman.
Well, in 1977-78, she had won a bunch of Emmys and an Oscar at this point.
Yeah. Definitely, it's a feather in their cap. No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he's done saying that, a black net drops down on top of his head, and two or three pigs rush the stage, two in blue sweatshirts, and one in a Canadian Mountie outfit. And then a couple more pigs join in.
Strange Pork comes in, mm-hmm. and says, "We did it!"
As they muscle him off stage, telling Kermit that pigs have taken over the show.
At that point, a green pig comes on stage, doing a bad impression of Kermit, says that his name is Kermit the Pig, and he's about to introduce the first act.
Now, who is the voice of Kermit the Pig?
Dave Goles.
That surprises me a little bit. I assumed it was Richard Hunt, because we've talked about in both of Muppets and Men and Memoirs of a Muppet Writer, there are anecdotes that mention how Richard Hunt would frequently do the voices and characters of Muppets for visitors when they would come backstage and the actual Muppeteers weren't available.
Mm.
And that he was an excellent mimic of the other voices. And so I figured that maybe that was his gym, but maybe the fact that it's not that great of a gym makes more sense for it to be Dave. Sorry, Dave. But also, it's very clearly supposed to be a bad impression.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there are a couple of vocal tics where he gets it wrong.
Yeah. At that moment, Piggy crashes the stage, demanding to know what's going on. Pig Kermit tells her that pigs have taken over the show, which she doesn't care about. She just wants to know where her frog is. Pig Kermit informs her that she's starring in the opening number, and she starts to say that she doesn't care, realizes what he says, and that stops her in her tracks. She says,
"We'll talk about what's-his-name later."
And now let's get the show rolling with a little pig music!
Good line. And rushes off the stage to get ready for her act. So they start the show with a little pig music. And Ben, we started the season with a pig opening number, and now we're ending the season with a pig opening number.
And some of the same pigs are in it.
Yep.
The giant boar-mouthed Muppet is in there. He had a name that you told me before, which I have never quite remembered. And the girl pig who was in Lonely Goat Herd is also back as part of our cast of surrounding pigs. We have a clown pig, a Shakespearean pig, a cowboy pig, pig in a maroon suit. I've frequently used the phrase generic pig to describe the little beady-eyed pigs who show up in the show, and there seem to be two of them, but also I think they're mostly using pigs that have been around. In this number, we have Link as a ship's captain, which I believe is from a sketch just a couple episodes ago, and then we have Strange Pork in a tux and Piggy. So that's 8 pigs, I believe.
Wow.
And I don't think any of them was fabricated for this. So I think that's, in addition to what I said earlier about the desire to have twists on the classic things that have become part of the show and have other people do it. So to have Dave doing Kermit's bits, and later we'll have somebody else do Fozzie's bits. We also, I think probably somebody walked into the workshop and just saw a wall of pigs and said, we need to do something with this.
By the way, the female pig's name is Annie Sue.
Thank you. Never remember that.
Give Louise Gold her credit.
She deserves it.
The light on the lady in tights.
Or the bride with the guy on the side.
Or the ball where she gives them her all.
That's Entertainment is from the MGM musical from 1953, The Bandwagon, with Sid Charisse and Fred Astaire. Written by Howard Dietz and Arthur Schwartz. It's, you know, one of those songs that Hollywood writes about Hollywood. And I think the main appeal of this song number is that it has something we've talked about before, very flat sets that are redolent of Muppets Take Manhattan and Broadway Merry Melodies. What's it actually called?
Yeah, Merry Melodies.
No, Merry Melodies is the cartoons on Nick at Night. It's Manhattan Melodies.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And guess what? I loved it.
There are basically no jokes in this. It's just pigs reading the lines and being the various lyrics. So there's a lyric with the clown with his pants falling down, and so one of the pigs is a clown.
Yep.
There's the line about Shakespeare, and it's delivered by the Shakespearean pig.
Mm-hmm.
It's really very simple adaptation of the stuff. It's just pigs, pigs, pigs is the only thing that's there. And pigs, 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 pigs having fun was one of the previous songs full of pigs that I thought wasn't very inventive. But
I loved it.
Because it was Manhattan Melodies, you were all over it.
Yeah. I do have one issue with this opening number.
Yeah.
Which is, I think calling Piggy the star is a stretch.
Yes. But if you need Piggy to be on your side, that's what you're going to say.
Yeah.
And unlike a sketch that's going to happen in a couple segments from now, where somebody needs to be on stage instantly, when Kermit the Pig says, "You're going to be in this number," there is a realistic amount of time for Piggy to go backstage and then be in the sketch. It takes her about 30 seconds to join the number, which was perfect. It was ideal in terms of maintaining the reality of the backstage, onstage environment.
One statistical note, at the end of the song, they're all waving flags celebratorily.
Yeah.
While the applause happens.
To the lyrics, "Hip hooray, the American way."
Yes. And Link is standing next to Piggy, and he's waving his flag, but it's in her face, and she gets it out of the way and then hits him twice.
I thought you were going to point out the fact that there were 2 British flags in the line, because they were aware of the fact that the show is so popular in the UK. To have it be "Hip hooray, the American way" would have been alienating to a solid 50% of their audience. No, statistics, hits, all makes sense.
Yep.
After that, we go to Statler and Waldorf, And Waldorf says that he didn't know that pigs could do that.
And Statler asks, what, be that talented?
Waldorf says, no, be that bad.
Not a good start. I would have liked it if they liked this.
Because it wasn't the normal Muppet Show.
Yep. They should have started on board and then fallen off as the episode went on.
No, I think you're blinded by the Manhattan melodies of it all. I think they are 100% correct. And that was a bad sketch.
No, it was perfect. 10 out of 10.
We then cut to a redressed set. It feels like it's supposed to be a new set because they talk about it as if it's a place we've never been before. But this is the prop room that has been redressed for this particular backstage scene. And now it's the boiler room.
And Fozzie's standing in the room with his ear to the door.
Off screen, we hear a voice say, move, move, little frog, according to the subtitles.
And then the door opens and the pigs shove Kermit in.
Fozzie is so glad to see Kermit. He then recaps the plot.
Already?
Yes. We haven't even had an ad break. They then establish that it's the boiler room in two different sentences.
Mm-hmm.
In case we can't tell from the massive boiler behind them that literally has special effects steam coming out of it. They're really going all in on the making you understand that this is the boiler room. And that is, I believe, so that the next punchline works.
Okay.
Because Fozzie reveals that he has a plan. They're going to get out of here. They're going to tie a bunch of sheets together and then slip out the window. And Kermit says, what window? And then Fozzie realizes there's no window and freaks out. That's why you have to say it's a boiler room. Because, yes.
Boiler rooms never have windows.
Yeah. Or if they do, they're in the basement. They're little basement windows.
However, theaters don't have a lot of windows either. Because that kind of ruins the whole dark vibe.
That's right.
Did it sound to you like Fozzie's voice had an echo on it, but Kermit's didn't?
I didn't notice that, but now I'm intrigued.
Yeah. Well, dear listeners, maybe you noticed it. Maybe you'll notice it when you watch it again.
Maybe it'll become apparent with any clips that are added to this particular segment.
Kermit, it's necessary. Believe me. Well, I don't know. What can
Fozzie,
I do?
Fozzie, do not panic. Listen, we'll use that telephone there and call for help.
So yeah, Fozzie freaks out. Kermit tells Fozzie not to panic.
Fozzie goes over to the phone, picks it up. There is a dial tone. He's excited that it's working. And as he brings the phone over to Kermit, he tears it off the wall, leaving wires behind. And Kermit ends the sketch by saying, this is going to take a lot longer than I thought, which is a very minor trope that ends two out of the three Boiler Room sketches.
Yeah.
So it's almost like it's set up to be a rule of three running gag, and then they don't fulfill it.
We'll get to that later, then.
Fair enough.
Kermit the Pig introduces Cloris Leachman. He starts the introduction, but Cloris interrupts because she has a problem. And the issue is that the closing number with Sweetums is supposed to be the closing number and not next.
Kermit the Pig says, I'm so sorry, and gets Sweetums to go back to the dressing room. And we have an absolute monstrosity walk behind them, which is Sweetum's raggy body with a giant round pig head, which I believe is the head from Swine Lake.
Oh, that would make sense.
And it's creepy as hell. And Cloris looks appropriately dismayed by this, but also because she's now starting to put together that not is all what it should be. And she accuses Kermit of not being Kermit.
You are not a frog, and there's nothing you can say that will ever convince me that you are a frog. Nothing.
Ribbit. Ribbit. Ribbit.
Kermit, it is you.
And when he looks at the camera and snorts in triumph, she then has a moment realizing, wait, what's going on? At which point he says, ribbit again, in order to lure her back. She goes, oh, my old eyes, I'm so sorry, and then goes backstage to get ready for her musical number.
He introduces it, Oz, once again.
And Cloris comes on stage with a completely different hairdo than what she's had. She's got the same dress, the same outfit, but her hair has been completely fixed. But she's cleverly patting it as if it had just been set or that she's adjusting her wig. Either way, it's a marvelous bit of continuity. Of she's aware of the fact that there were about 7 seconds between when she was on stage and when she's backstage when the curtain opens. And she's performing it of, I made it work.
Academy Award winning actress.
Darn tootin'. And then we have what I assume is your least favorite musical number of all time. Because how long is it, Pete?
3.38 minutes.
She starts singing at 6:50. 6 minutes and 50 seconds. And the final drum beats of the song happen at 10 minutes and 1 second. And all of the stuff in between is selections from various operettas from between 1908 and 1928. She has an amazing, high, gorgeous soprano. She's accompanied through two of the songs by Link Hogthrob doing an impenetrable tenor because he's trying to match her and Jim's trying to do the Link voice and it makes all of his syllables incomprehensible. And in the first two songs, there are two laughs from the laugh track of Link getting caught in the tree and then as he extracts himself, having one of the limbs of the tree smack back in his face. There are no jokes in the songs and there's no jokes in the performance. She's not doing anything heightened in all of this. She's just singing legitimate recreations of a musical style that went out of date before World War II.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ben?
Yeah.
I didn't hate this.
I'm fascinated.
I think the pigs that come in midway through saved it for me.
You say midway through. They come in at 9:11.
Never forget.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a minute more of the song at that point. Yeah. So I don't like opera.
Mm. This isn't opera, by the way. This is operetta.
Yeah,
in fact, one of the
because it's in English.
No, because it's a light opera. It's a small opera. An opera, there are no vocal parts that are not sung. Whereas in an operetta, you sing in an operatic style, but you can still have dialogue.
Right.
We have had an operetta previously. In the Zero Mostel episode, we had a reference to Naughty Marietta, the operetta, at which point you said Vianetta about 1,000 times. And Oh Sweet Mystery of Life, the most famous selection from Naughty Marietta that I mentioned at the time, is what she performs once Link has extracted himself from the tree.
Yeah, it's opera.
So I had a fun time with searching Wikipedia for these songs because I was trying to figure out why they chose these.
Mm-hmm.
That unlike, for example, the medley of songs that they performed to J.P. Gross, and unlike the medley of songs that they performed with Ethel Merman, those were songs that somebody might have heard of. But I think light opera from between 1908 and 1928, these came from Naughty Marietta, The Chocolate Soldier, The New Moon, which is on the Muppet Wikia as The New Moob, which somebody should probably correct since it's crowdsourced, and The Student Prince, none of which have any profile today. New Moon is listed in the 1978 book The Worst Movies of All Time, but that has been so much superseded by so many films that have come out since 1978, it's not even remembered anymore. And not to mention the fact that it's been supplanted by another highly contentious movie called New Moon. And so I finally came to the conclusion, based on a snippet of a line in a Wikipedia article, that talked about how music's performance literally changed with the change of culture around World War II. And I realized this is the musical style that I hated and fast-forwarded through in the boring romantic parts of the Marx Brothers movies.
Yeah.
All of which led me to ask, why did they choose these? Whose idea was this? Was this Cloris's? Was this Jim's? Who thought this was a good idea?
I mean, we already established this episode. We don't wildly speculate. But if we did...
We did. I think your tidbits about Cloris Leachman's performance background leads me to believe that this is stuff that's probably was already in her wheelhouse.
Yep. These were probably those things that Paul Lynde was singing in her dorm room. We go back to the boiler room, where Fozzie and Kermit are still stuck. They're coming up with a plan for when the pigs come in next. Fozzie says he's going to clobber the pig with a big stick that is conveniently in the boiler room.
One of the worst made props the Muppet Show has ever manufactured. A large, lumpy, ill-painted...
Is it a caveman club?
It's about as close to a Captain Caveman club as you could come up with, yeah. And then, in one of the worst timed jokes ever, Gonzo is pushed in through the door by the pig and comes fully into the room in full sight before Fozzie takes a beat and then hits him with the club and then is sorry. Like, it's so mischoreographed in terms of its timing.
And that's why it's great. Sometimes poorly timed things are very funny.
I think I prefer a little bit more believability.
I think this is the outer limits of what I would say is funny. Mm. Anything longer and I would be on your side. But this is the perfect distance of, yes, Fozzie obviously should have realized that that was his friend Gonzo.
They have very different kinds of noses, pigs and Gonzo.
But curled. Maybe it was a pig's tail.
He thought a pig was backing into the room.
Yeah.
The best thing that I think is in this sketch is once Gonzo has arrived, he then steals the sketch.
Oh, yeah.
That really hurt!
Oh, Gonzo, I'm sorry. I thought you were a pig.
Terrific! Terrific! First he clobbers me, then he insults me.
And then, much like a previous episode where Kermit was sick and Gonzo gets on the phone and describes all the things that are going wrong with the show to Kermit over the phone, we then have Gonzo once again in narrator mode. Like, we're really, I know that nothing in Muppets is in continuity, but we're really laying pipe here for Gonzo to be the narrator for Muppet Christmas Carol later on.
Ben, they're in the boiler room. Of course there's pipes there.
And he then describes that when Kermit asks how the show's going, he talks about the new MC, Kermit the Pig, and how great a job he's doing. And when Fozzie tells Kermit not to take that personally, he then moves on to dispassionately point out that also the new comedian Fozzie the Pig is really funny.
Now, Ben, I do want to go back just a little bit.
Please.
Because do you know why Kermit asked what's going on with the show? Because he's a good stage manager who puts the show first.
Is he, though? Not to pierce the veil of irony here, but I know in our last episode of the second series, we're lying a lot as to what we do and don't do, but I'm not sure I'm willing to let go of that one.
I don't know what you're talking about, lying what we do or don't do. No. We've never wildly speculated.
No, absolutely not. Yes, so he says that, in your opinion, because he's a good stage manager. In my opinion, because he's trapped in the boiler room with Fozzie, who's going from being wildly enthusiastic about their non-existent chances to getting out to being dramatically well over the top about anything that could possibly go wrong. In this case, when Fozzie says they need to get out of here.
Does that count?
And the new comedian, Fozzie the Pig? Oh, is he funny?
We gotta get out of here!
I was wondering.
I didn't log it. I wrote Fozzie freaks out and says, we gotta get out of here. But I didn't count it.
It's not, will you get out of here? So it's not somebody trying to get rid of somebody else, which is, I think, the key action. But the vocalization of it was pretty close in terms of rising stress. Gonzo then, again, steals the show by saying he has a great plan to get them out of here. Look what he's smuggled in, and he produces a teaspoon.
Gonzo starts digging a tunnel, and Fozzie and Kermit say they think they're going to be here for a while. For the second going to be here for a while joke.
And then we cut back to the curtain where Kermit the Pig makes a couple of terrible pig puns to introduce Fozzie the Pig. Now, this is happening after Gonzo has been locked up in the boiler room. But Gonzo has already mentioned that Fozzie the Pig has been going on and has been really funny.
Yeah, there's things we don't see in the show, Ben.
You think or that Fozzie the Pig did a set and then did a second set?
He may have been rehearsing backstage.
I think that's our only possible answer.
He may have been in another sketch and was very funny.
Do you think this is funnier because it's been seeded by Gonzo's line? Like, Fozzie the Pig coming out and doing his set is appalling. His set is worse than Fozzie's sets. But I'm willing to suspend that for a little bit because I'm amused by his existence because Gonzo has preset him up. And because he's so gross looking that I'm distracted by the whole weird appearance of Fozzie the Pig while he's on stage.
Now, Ben, do you think that besides the snout, the pig snout, that Fozzie the Pig looks like if Fozzie the Bear shaved as requested in the Pigs in Space episode last week?
I think that's what Statler and Waldorf think as they talk twice about the fact that he got a haircut. Like, they don't seem to understand that this isn't Fozzie Bear.
See, his new material isn't bad.
Yes, but his new haircut is awful.
They seem to believe that this is Fozzie doing a bit, like when he comes out with Chucky. Like, it's just him trying desperately to get some comedic clout, and they think he's wearing a pig nose and has shaved himself. I don't think the body is quite the same shape.
No.
But mostly his skin is a weird fabric that I found off-putting. It's slimy in a weird way.
Yeah.
I had a hard time with it.
Yeah, it's disconcerting for sure.
But I'm interested as to whether or not it occurred to you, whether your response to this sketch was affected by Gonzo mentioning it beforehand. Or if that didn't make you think of it one way or the other.
No, I generally have such low expectations for any of the stand-up bits that I don't think Fonzo.
Ayy.
No, Ben. Because it's Fonzo.
I, Fonzo the Great, will start this jukebox by hip-checking it.
He's going to ride a shark over some water skis.
While chickens cluck the battle hymn of the Republic.
Yeah, no, this was bad. Mm. I did kind of like the second joke, the going back to school joke. Mm. I did not understand the third one. I mean, I got the double porked.
Well, I could do this all night. Yeah, but my sauerkraut is double porked. I get it? Double porked? Porked, hugga, 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 hugga.
But I didn't understand what sauerkraut had to do with any of that.
I don't know. Maybe sauerkraut and pork go together in some gastrointestinal disaster?
Yeah, you'd put sauerkraut on a sausage.
On an all-ham sausage?
Yeah.
I think it's probably something like that, that people who like food would be able to know that sauerkraut is, it's a slideways version of one of the many pig references that they're
making. I didn't get the vehicle pun of what sauerkraut could be related to.
No. But the fact that Statler and Waldorf follow up with that by saying sauerkraut, double porked, and then the worst several times.
I liked that.
I wondered if it had been in an earlier draft liverwurst instead of sauerkraut, which is another German food, and that's why they were doing the worst. I think it's a remnant of something else, because you're right, it's otherwise just word salad.
No, sauerkraut is like pickled stuff. It's not salad.
Well, word salad is all that Cloris Leachman can eat because the vegetables are going to protest for eating them.
It's very true. After Statler and Waldorf finished saying that Fozzie Pig is the worst.
Several times over.
So good. We cut to the Swedish Chef. Except it's not the Swedish Chef.
Oinga inga honga 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 popcorn.
And I gotta say, I chuckled like a madman through this entire sketch, and I don't know precisely why. I have a couple of theories, but we have Frank doing the voice instead of Jim of the Swedish pig chef, and I'm going to do something we've never done before.
Okay.
I'm going to wildly speculate.
Unheard of.
I think Jim is the hands.
I think so, too.
Because the hands look freakishly big compared to what normal Swedish Chef hands are. And we have been led to believe by previous reportage that when Jim does the Swedish Chef head and mouth, Frank does the hands.
Yes.
So if we're doing a fun DS9 version of this episode where people are doing different roles, I think it would be a behind-the-scenes entertaining thing for Frank to do the head and mouth of the Swedish Chef and Jim to therefore do the hands.
Yeah, in terms of the idea and the spirit of what they're all doing, yes, it makes sense that the two people who usually do that just switch instead of, especially knowing that Frank is doing the voice. Mm-hmm. If it was Richard or Jerry doing the voice.
Or Louise.
Then I could see it being two completely different, like, let's give two new people. Mm-hmm. But if Frank's doing the voice, it's got to be Jim as the
hands. Feels like they have to do a swap.
Yeah.
And Frank has a very different take on how to do fake Swedish. Whereas we have talked about in the past that Jim pretty much does Ishver for pretty much all Swedish, Frank seems to have decided that hygge, the traditional Icelandic word that means a sense of tidy place, is the syllables that he's going to repeat ad infinitum in terms of hinga hunga hinga hunga is his Swedish, then followed up by oink oink oink.
Today they're making popcorn, which is essentially the joke from the pilot.
What was the joke from the pilot?
I don't remember exactly, obviously, even though Ben, as we've established, I have an impeccable memory.
That's right.
I never forget anything.
But on this one rare occasion.
Yeah, that I can't seem to remember. This is a tiny blunderbuss.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pistol-sized, it's a pistol shrimp-sized blunderbuss.
I know that we've seen the chef make donuts
mm-hmm.
with a pistol, and we've seen him use the blunderbuss.
The what?
I'm sorry, the hinga oink to create.
Not what I was looking for, but I'll accept it.
To create a salad by throwing a lettuce up and then having it come down in shards. So firing things in the air. I don't think we've seen popcorn is my
No, but I was just
yes.
basically getting at it's the same joke
with it is a the same joke.
Different vegetable.
Yep. And in this case, he throws an ear of corn in the air and fires the gun at it, at which point popcorn rains down.
Fine joke, great performance.
Basically, yes. It is a perfectly ordinary Swedish Chef sketch that is made hilarious by the cognitive dissonance of it being the same, only different.
Mm-hmm. We then fade to black, come up with our UK spot, which is Vegetarian's Hospital.
Wait, this was the UK spot?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's in the UK spot, but I'm still shocked that a part of the overarching satire of we're doing pig bits that are recognizable elements of the show would be something they'd cut from this episode.
Ben, what else in this episode could have been the UK spot?
I mean, it's a perfectly valid point. It's never occurred to me.
That's why we had to do this episode T to B, top to bottom, because literally everything is a runner. I stopped writing down R for runner. A third of the way through, I was just like, oh yeah, of course, this is pigs, or it's the boiler room. One of the two things.
So you got RRR, and then it was too long?
Yeah, I don't have time for that. Who has 3.5 hours?
The Vegetarian's Hospital opens with a different narration because it's pig-themed.
Mm-hmm.
A pig-headed quack who's gone hog wild.
And a different voice.
Mm-hmm. The only voice that's the same is for Pigs in Space, since that was already a pig sketch.
Yes.
The bit with Piggy goofing off is that she's using an ear scope, using the light and magnifier in an ear scope to peer at the diamond that's on her ring.
Which is so shiny.
And when she notices that the camera is on her, she drops it and runs into place next to Dr. Pig and Nurse Louise Gold.
Nurse Pig.
Let's give her a name.
She's credited as Nurse Pig on the Wikia.
Yeah.
This is not an Annie Sue moment.
It's not a Mary Sue moment.
No. Annie Sue is the name of the pig, Ben.
Yeah.
And they yet again reveal,
are they treating a vegetable or not?
And this episode, Vegetarian's Hospital, perfect record. Flawless. One for one. Yes. Although there are some fruit in there.
We have grapes, an ear of corn, an eggplant with teeth, creepily enough, a cabbage, which is revealed to be a lettuce, an artichoke, and a melon. When Nurse Piggy says what the various problems are, she says that the corn has a bad ear and the potato has a bad eye. I did not see a potato.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's back there.
And she ends the trio of jokes by saying, the eggplant, ... And when Dr. Pig asks yes, she says, the eggplant has a bad yolk. To which he responds, well, that makes two of you.
Yeah. I don't like this.
I did not anticipate and therefore definitely laughed out loud at, that's why they pay me such a big salary.
Oh, yes. I was just talking about those first three.
Yeah. In terms of the whole sketch, the salary pun was, in my opinion, genuinely clever.
Eventually, the voice comes out again, ending the sketch. I do like how they all look around for the voice.
Including the fruits and vegetables.
Yep. And then Dr. Pig does a lettuce joke and tickles the lettuce.
Very much gets his hands in that lettuce.
Not hits. But then he hits his head on the dangling light for the fifth hit of the episode.
We then have another very brief, we're just doing all the hits, but with pigs, for a Muppet News Flash. And a pig version of the Muppet Newsman comes on, and there's something about the lighting or the change in the puppet, but his jacket is so loud.
I didn't notice
so
that.
So much more apparent than it always. I think it is literally the same jacket that the Muppet Newsman always wears, but it was vibrantly, garishly plaid in a way I had never previously appreciated.
This is the only pig character to be played by the original.
I mean, obviously, Nelson is still Strange Pork, and Henson is still Link.
Right, but in terms of the swap outs.
Correct.
Jim plays Newsman and Newspig.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, I have some information for you.
Okay.
This was also the UK spot.
Oh, see, that's interesting, because I was going to say, but usually this isn't long enough to be a UK spot. But this, I think, would have been what I would have cut as my 2-minute long ad break.
Nope, both of them.
Oh.
Both of them got the axe on Nickelodeon.
The UK spot is not the same thing as being cut on Nickelodeon.
True.
Because, as we have established previously, Nick Jr.
put the UK spots back in.
Yes. So if Nick Jr. is cutting these, it's for some other perceived youth content reason.
Could be that too. But the notes in the Wikia say that both of them are UK spots.
Okay.
And the notes are that Nickelodeon has cut the UK spots, Vegetarian's Hospital, Newsflash.
Curious.
Anyway, Muppet News Pig talks about Dr. Bunsen Honey Pig.
That's right.
And
do you wish you had gotten to see Dr. Bunsen Honey Pig?
I absolutely do.
Like if in a first season newsflash, they'd had him in one of the little windows in a cutout?
Oh, yeah. And then there's some stuff about, oh, that's probably why it got cut, because it's a Vincent Van Gogh joke and about cutting off ears.
Yeah, but they didn't mention that Van Gogh cuts off his ears. That just requires cultural understanding.
Yeah, they talk about successfully converting a sow's ear into a silk purse.
Are you familiar with the saying?
No!
I had a feeling that would be the case.
No!
So there's a classic adage, which is, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Meaning, if something is base to begin with, you can't turn it into high quality.
I think this podcast proves otherwise.
Well, that is a saying that people who know about old stuff have frequently encountered in their lives. And I did assume you would probably have never heard.
Completely new to me.
Yeah. So that's what that is about. And that then they take the additional leap of saying, well, if it was made out of a pig's ear, and since everybody in this episode is a pig, who's a famous pig that would have lost his ear? Oh, let's come up with the worst joke construction ever. Vincent Van Gogh Pig.
Dr. Honey Pig is now the object of a massive civil and criminal suit by the wife of a neighborhood artist, Mrs. Vincent Van Gogh Pig.
Hey, it is more creative than Dr. Pig in the last sketch.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true. I think it's equally uncreative. But they needed to make sure the joke landed. And so they just said that. But it's still, they don't ever say who famously cut off his ear. There's no mention of violence.
Mm-hmm.
You're just supposed to connect the dots.
Yeah, it's not great, except for Dr. Bunsen Honey Pig.
It's a big stretch all over. They were very limber after this sketch. They were ready to go for a long run. But instead, they return to the boiler room.
And Gonzo's made a surprising amount of progress.
Mm-hmm. They've removed several bricks, and he is using the teaspoon to scoop tiny particles of sand into Fozzie's outstretched hat, which Fozzie tells Kermit he's going to smuggle out in his hat into the rest of the building.
I don't see why he would need to smuggle it out, but I like the visual.
It's a very traditional prison escape trope of when you're removing dirt from someplace, you then need to
hide
get rid of it somehow.
Yeah, I understand the trope. I'm just saying that was a very big room and they didn't actually need to do it.
You're right, that Fozzie dumping the dirt all over his head and then going, I guess not, was a good punchline.
Piggy unlocks the door to check on Kermit. She wants him to know that she had nothing to do with the overtaking of the show. Kermit doesn't believe her.
Until she says that she's willing to stay here with him. And he's touched.
Yeah.
Says, really? Well, that's really very nice of you, Miss Piggy.
And at that exact moment, a pig who... This is my complaint about this sketch. That should have been a scooter doppelganger. Should have been wearing Scooter's...
Should have been Pig the Gopher.
Jacket or something. Because he's there to tell Piggy that Pigs in Space is up next.
She says, you're just going to have to cancel it. Because I'm going to stay here with my frog.
And he says that they don't need to do that. They'll just get someone to take her place.
And she has a marvelous beat where she comes back over to Kermit, looks at him, thinks about it, and then says, bye, and runs out of the door.
And she slams it shut.
Well, no, because the pig comes back in to say, that's show business, pal.
You're right.
But... it is in an episode where they just had some of the worst timing in the boiler room. Frank's timing of, and puppeteering of Piggy's head so that she's looking away and looking at the camera and making us really think that she's thinking about it, despite the fact that there's nothing moving in her face, but controlling her camera angles in order to make us feel like she's weighing this just by tilting her head is so well done.
Yeah, it's almost like Frank is a really good puppeteer.
It's almost like he doesn't think he's a good puppeteer, which is why he swung entirely to directing. Kind of drives me crazy. But also has such a good sense of comic timing. The man should be telling other people how to deliver lines, and not just faster and more intense, but slower and getting your camera angles right.
But some actors didn't want to listen to that. And he had to have other actors tell people how to have them act and deliver lines.
Look, we all know the score about how this goes down.
Is the quote, I'm not going to take directions from Miss Piggy?
I think it is, yeah.
Will never not be funny to me.
Yeah, it's so
insulting. I mean, and sad.
It's so insulting.
But it's very funny.
Because the guard pig who wasn't Scooter... was trying to get Piggy on stage for Pigs in Space. We then cut to Pigs in Space. And this is the last Pigs in Space that will be introduced with vocabulary.
Really?
We will continue to have Pigs in Space in future seasons, but they won't have the same opening. They'll just go Pigs in Space, and then they'll cut to the spaceship. So we'll no longer get the three headshots and the three vocab words. So our final three vocab words are quixotic, vacuous, and somnambulistic.
Somnambulist.
Is there a second M in there?
I believe so.
Somnambulism? Yes. Not somnambulism?
Yes.
Okay. As I mentioned, the voiceover is the same, but we do start with a scene already in progress. And as we come in from the view screen, somebody is throwing sparklers at it from behind the scene, and the inside lights of the set are flashing red of a red alert, and there's a constant klaxon going off, which makes it a little hard to hear what the dialogue is. This was definitely helped considerably by subtitles.
But since I'm a subtitles on all the time guy, had no issues. But yes, basically they're just freaking out, calling for people to go to battle stations.
And Link starts exclaiming, oh, oh, oh. And when they query to find out whether or not he's been hit by one of the sparklers that's raining on the outside of the ship, it turns out that he has a stain on his uniform.
Which, even though he says that, they don't really hear him.
No, they pretty much ignore him.
Yeah, which is the right call. Piggy and Strange Fork are probably predisposed because at that point, an alien shows up outside that window. and they're trying to get him to look. He's still talking about the spot. Finally, Link notices that they're talking about an alien, because Strange Pork identifies the alien as chopped liver.
Link says, no, I think it's ketchup, paying attention to the stain. But when he finally turns around, he then goes, not chopped liver, anything but chopped liver.
And then starts hiccuping because the proximity of chopped liver gives him gas.
Strange Pork then gives the most passive-aggressive advice as to how to get rid of the hiccups ever. He says, hold your breath for 500 or 600 seconds.
That's a long time.
That'll definitely cure him of his hiccups and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It really seems like he's real tired of Link at that point. But it's not in his delivery, weirdly enough.
Nope.
Try holding your breath and counting to 500 or 600.
No, he's trying to be very helpful. Maybe pigs can hold their breath longer than humans can.
10 minutes? It does, however, stop the hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
Piggy says, no, you idiot. It's the chopped liver monster from the galaxy Xabar.
They say it's hideous. Then the monster says in what might be anti-Semitic.
That is the chopped liver monster from the galaxy Xabar.
It's hideous.
Hideous? For 169 a pound, you want beautiful?
I mean, we are already talking about the Jewish deli Xabars.
Didn't make that connection.
Yeah. It's a New York joke.
Okay. Then the announcer comes back on and says, tune in next time for another digestive episode of Pigs in Space.
Statler and Waldorf chime in with Statler saying that the pigs may have taken over the show, but there's one thing they definitely haven't changed.
Waldorf would like to know what that is.
And he says, the show is still not funny.
I am glad they still don't like the show, but I do wish they liked it at first, just because it's something different. We go back to the boiler room. Gonzo is still in the wall.
Mm.
Scooter comes in the door to let them know that they're free. Someone next door was holding a hog calling contest and all the pigs left to go there.
Kermit says that he's going to run and do the introduction and he needs Fozzie to tell Gonzo what's going on. And Fozzie goes to the wall to shout in for him and his voice echoes like crazy.
Why, Ben?
Because for some reason, Frank's voice is echoing even though Jim's isn't?
No, because the Muppet Theater is a Real House of Leaves situation.
But also because Gonzo has dug so far in that he can't even be seen through the hole in the wall anymore. And Fozzie is a little amazed, commenting to camera, he's doing better with that spoon than he thought they would have.
And then they cut to curtain. Gonzo never says anything.
No.
Kermit's on stage. He says things have gotten a little strange tonight, but they can always depend on Cloris Leachman.
They then go to a desert island, and Cloris pulls herself onto set as if she's climbing up onto the desert island from the far side. Her clothes are suitably ragged, but she is drip dry. However, to imply that she has just been in the water, she pulls a fish out of her sleeve and throws it away. The same fish that was found in Rolf's piano an episode ago. This is the exact same flat fish that they decided was a tuna, despite not looking at all like a tuna.
This fish, however, is not identified.
Correct. She sits down on a pile of rags to get a rest, and it turns out to be Sweetums, who makes a couple of terrible male passes at her and asks if she makes good fondue.
She answers with a question of her own, which is, that depends. Do you think of me of the cook or the dish?
Then, after some insults and chasing,
some more stereotypically 70s sexism,
a boat shows up with another giant monster in it. This is a monster we've seen a couple of times before. Specifically, he's the monster in the park with Madeline Kahn, who shrinks when she says nice things about him. Although he seemed smaller to start with there. He didn't seem like he would tower over Madeline the same way that he towers over Cloris and Sweetums here.
Yeah.
In that previous sketch, very clearly designed after Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are.
Looking at a picture now, I definitely see that.
That is not mentioned in the Muppet Wiki.
This character is officially named Dog Lion.
Mm-hmm. Might as well have been named The Wild Thing. She is very excited when he comes and says, "Did somebody call for help?" and starts in on a song called "Just in Time" by Betty Congdon and Adolph Green from the 1956 film Bells Are Ringing with Judy Holliday. That is a thing I assume you've never heard of,
Pete. Of course not.
However, you may, just might, be familiar with another song from that same musical.
Definitely not. Never going to hear of it.
It's a musical about a woman who answers phone calls and does answering services for people out of her apartment. And she sings a song called...
Whatever you're about to say, I'm not going to know what it is.
Perfect Relationship. And it was featured prominently in episode 16 of Bunheads.
Hey, Ben. I never finished Bunheads.
So you may or may not have gotten to the episode where Bailey Buntain, the blonde bunhead, does a practice audition for Michelle, and Michelle can't help but take over and do the song herself.
Hey, Ben. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I was like, are there any songs performed in this show that anybody would know? And the answer is I don't think that Just in Time is a very well-known song. But turns out Lena Horne performed it in 1959. Teresa Brewer performed it in 1960. Ella Fitzgerald in 61. And it's on Barbara's third album, called Third Album, in 1964.
Atta girl, Babs.
But it hadn't been performed like the way we find most of our numbers. They were newly popular in 75 to 77. I think this is squarely something that Cloris Leachman liked from 1956. And like all the other music in this episode was just throwback stuff that she appreciated. Anyway, it's Sweetums and Cloris Leachman running circles round in islands and...
Hey, Ben. Now, I know we don't wildly speculate, but I didn't think we lied to each other.
Okay.
Because you said there weren't going to be any more of those.
I never said that.
I said, am I going to have to count these?
No, you don't have to count them.
Ben, 3 points to confirm a line. That's all I'm saying. If there's one more, I'm going to have to count them.
Well, I think you will have done so instinctively if that happens.
I'm just saying, if there's three, you lied to me. Two, I'm not happy about. But,
Pete,
yeah,
there's a twist.
Talk about a little twist.
Yeah, that will be revealed later.
Okay.
Let me just say, three is not the correct number.
It is the magic number, though.
Mm. But not the loneliest number.
No, that's one.
Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one.
It's true.
No, it's two.
Right. It's true.
Calling?
About to say it.
Well, it's your true calling coming through. It's your true calling. That's why you love it. So don't be afraid to let it show. Your true calling. True calling. It's beautiful like a rainbow.
I'm so impressed with you. At one point, Cloris Leachman finds a canteen. Sweetums grabs it out of her hand. She tells him to look out. He says he's not going to fall for that. And at that point, a coconut falls from the tree, hits him on the head. Hit number six.
The end of the song. Dog boy man, what's this called?
Dog lion.
Thank you. Dog lion says, well, he only has one question. Is she the cook or the dish? And they all run circles around the island again. Then we go back to the curtain and Kermit says, let's have a warm thank you for our special guest star. And Cloris comes out saying that she's had a wonderful time, at which point there's a clattering. And it cuts to the wall next to the box where...
The Booma Booma Boys.
But instead of it being something exploding into the wall, it's a hole in the wall that Gonzo has dug his way out. And he says, freedom is mine. Wait, Kermit, what are you doing
here? Cloris says that it's been different this week.
Mm.
Kermit says he doesn't know how to explain those pigs. She wants to know where they came from. He wants to know where did they go.
And he says, who would organize a hog calling contest? It's bizarre.
She says, it was easy.
Cloris, you did that for us?
Well, I'm from Iowa.
You must be a great hog caller.
So,
which instantly has all the pigs converge back on her.
At which point, Kermit closes the show. But as he's closing the show, Kermit the Pig comes out and lip syncs along with Kermit saying, we'll see you next time on The Muppet Show. And Kermit says, will you get out of here?
And then we cut to the orchestra and the end credits.
Which also the notes in the Wikia said that this is the last time this credit theme will be used.
Yeah, we will have a different ending theme starting next season.
I look forward to it, because it'll have different timing, I'm sure.
At the close of the credits, we cut back to Statler and Waldorf in the box. And Waldorf says, that was weird.
Statler says he's going to tell the world.
Waldorf encourages him, saying, go ahead.
He says, that was weird.
And then they just repeat weird a bunch of times.
Yep, loved this one too. Weird and the worst. I think that's a perfect description for the Muppet Show.
I'm not sure that's how you'd want to advertise yourself in TV Guide. Weird and the worst. I'm not sure that's going to draw in new viewers.
No, but if publicists reached out to Statler and Waldorf for a quote, it would definitely say, weird, worst, Statler, Waldorf.
Yeah, definitely sums up their perspective on the show quite succinctly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that for the episode.
Yes, it is. Now, Ben, I have some statistics for you.
What stats have we accrued over the course of this, our final episode of the season?
Not a stat-heavy episode. Mm. We had 6 hits. 1, will you get out of here? That's it. In terms of music, we have a new leader in the clubhouse for least amount of music.
Get out. I did think that because there was so little other music, there was a chance that that really long opening bit might have shrunk it down, but...
Yep. Even counting the Swedish Chef intro, the Pigs in Space intro, and the little musical stinger of Just in Time as she's climbing on the island, there was an even 8.5 minutes of music this episode, which our previous low was 8.87 minutes in the Zero Mostel episode. Nope, the Steve Martin episode. Only 32.14% music. Now, in terms of ranking, I had one spot left available.
Which was 12 or 8?
8. It didn't fit cleanly in there.
I think you thought she was better than 8.
No. I put her at 9. I did really like everything she did. I thought she was great. I thought the episode was great. But you're right about the opera. Even though I did think she was great in it, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, overall, I would have rather watched other things instead of it.
I think also, but she only interacts primarily with vegetables and wordless animals, a bunch of Canadian pigs, and Kermit the Pig. I mean, we get a little bit of her at the very end, and I think she's charming in that bit with Kermit, but primarily one of the joys of a guest star is seeing her interact with the characters that we love, and that was not with whom she was interacting in this episode.
True. Now, Ben, I do love Sweetums. And her interactions with Sweetums were great.
I was worried. So I had seen the still of her and Sweetums on the island, and you had previously expressed irritation with guest stars doing musical numbers with Sweetums where the gag is just Sweetums is big, and he sort of throws the guest around. And I was wondering whether or not they were going to have more to do with her and Sweetums than that. And they did. Yeah. They came up with something else.
There was a dramatic scene. If it was just a song, yeah, I probably wouldn't have liked it. But the fact that there was a little sketch in there, too. Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was more sketch than it was song.
Yes.
They basically do a verse of that song, and then they're out.
Yeah, it's 1.38 minutes of actual song. Barely anything. Although that is longer than That's Entertainment was. So, yeah, 9th.
So who got bumped up into the 8th slot?
Julie Andrews. And, as this is the end of another round of 4 episodes, we have a new figurine reveal. And Ben, going into this episode, we were tied 2-2. You got 1 right. So Ben, you won 3-2.
Oh my gosh, I thought I needed 2 to tie.
No, you just needed 1 to win.
Oh, my mistake. I was like, well, congratulations, we're going to break even on figurines because I needed 2 points to win and I only got 1.
Nope.
Ah, well. All right. I know we don't wildly speculate on this show.
Nope, we would never.
I have a wager as to what this last pack contains.
I'm a gambling man.
I think it's Statler.
I hope so much it's Statler.
It is not. It is Rolf.
Oh, that's fun.
It is fun. Rolf has a brown torso with tiny little squiggles on it, trying to create the impression of fur.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. It's got good ears.
And he comes with a bust of Beethoven.
Ooh.
So it comes with a blank white head with a powdered wig and a stand for it to go on so that he can stand on his platform holding a piece of sheet music and standing next to Schroeder-like a bust of a composer.
That's very cool.
So figurines we could have gotten and didn't.
Mmm, fun.
Bunsen Honeydew.
Oh, wouldn't it be so good?
With a flask of unknown substance. Kermit the Frog holding a banjo and a rainbow.
Boring.
Miss Piggy with a magazine cover of herself.
Okay.
Fozzie Bear with a banana and a microphone on a stand. Animal with a set of drums.
Ooh.
Statler, as mentioned, who, weirdly enough, has a laptop with Scooter on it.
Weird.
Doesn't make much sense
No.
at all, except as a way of shoehorning Scooter into the cast, despite not making him a figurine.
Yep.
So, yeah, some good ones in there. A couple of turkeys, but...
No. Camilla's with Gonzo. And she's a chicken.
And as they say in the Muppet movie, Gonzo's a little like a turkey, but not much.
I'm very pleased with the ones we got.
I think we lucked out like crazy.
Yeah. Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you, Dee.
Since we're talking about trivia, let's talk about the season trivia.
Mm.
Overall, I got 22 trivia questions correct.
So five times 12 is 60.
Yeah. So slightly better than a third. You got 31 correct.
Mm.
So you slightly better than half.
Both failing grades.
But yours is a much better number than mine is. In terms of overall trackable stats, we had 123 hits this season compared to 216 last season. 51 explosions, which is up from last season's 44. 35 human Muppet kisses. Again, an increase.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Now, there were 15 last year.
Bizarre.
Yeah. It didn't feel like there were that many kisses.
Yeah.
But
in general.
Oh, right. Re-looking at my numbers.
Yeah.
It's mainly due, similar to Muppaphone in season one, really exploding that hit number. There were 19 kisses in Elton John and 8 in Rudolph Nureyev because of Baby It's Cold Outside and Piggy kissing him. So that's more than half of the kisses in the season just there. Now, we have to talk a little bit about Kevin. Will you get out of here? No, we don't have to talk about Kevin.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, shouldn't talk about him. Now, Ben, I went...
So you're saying Kevin can wait?
Kevin can absolutely wait. And you know what, Ben? Kevin can...
Can Birdland hop himself?
Yeah.
There's a callback for one person.
So I went back to look to see the previous Will You Get Out of Here's. Because I decided to start tracking that a little later into the season. So I went back to see, were there any others that were used before I started tracking it? Were there any that I missed before I recognized that this is a thing that's happening?
Mm.
And there are a couple of times where guest stars say, Will You Get Out of Here?
Okay.
And Ben, does that count?
Again, I think it all has to do with context. Like, it has to do with transition, I think.
So, for example, in episode 203 with Milton Berle,
okay,
he grabs Gonzo by the nose and says, get out of here.
Mm.
In 204 with Rich Little, Rich shoos Fozzie away with his hat saying, will you get out of here?
That one seems dope perfect.
Yeah. In the Steve Martin episode 208, he says, will you get out of here, Fozzie?
One of the reasons why we decided to track this was because when we talked about the changing of the writers at the beginning of the season, we talked about the fact that this largely was no longer a catchphrase-oriented show,
mm-hmm.
but there were one or two things that still filtered into the show. And so I think it's interesting that that phrase or that kind of way of transitioning in and out of a scene, while not a character-based catchphrase, it's still a crutch of the writers that they are moving things right along by having somebody end a conversation or turn things into, will you get out of here? And so, yes, I'd say by and large, all of those still count because they are still indicative of a writerly tick.
Mm-hmm. Something else I said I was going to track, so that's one. I have two other questions.
Yeah.
Two other clarifications on do they count. In the Rudolf Nureyev episode, when Sam the Eagle shoos Rudolf Nureyev out of backstage, he says, get out of here, you freak, you hippie, you weirdo.
Mm.
He doesn't say, will you get out of here? But he does command him to get out of here.
It's an imperative and not a request.
Yes. And he does it. He gets him out of there.
I wouldn't have said yes to that, except it does hold true in terms of the structure thing that I was just talking about. So I think we have to count it for that reason.
Okay. In the Teresa Brewer episode, Piggy, over the end credits, is doing her exercise thing. And she says, just keep going. One, two, three, four. Come on, keep exercising. One, two, yes, yes. One, two, one. Run in place. Get out of here, squeak. Because the mouse runs on stage. And then, oh no, it's Gonzo. Gonzo runs up to her. Does that count?
I leave that one up to you.
Did I log it already? If I put it on the spreadsheet already, it's staying there. I did not. So no, I will not count it.
Laziest man alive.
Uh-huh. Okay, now this is interesting, though. So in my get out of here
tally
Google Doc, I have three from Petula Clark. But in my spreadsheet, I have five listed.
Yeah, because we argued about it on the episode.
Yeah.
The other ones weren't the phrase. And that's why you said they counted, and I said, not really. And you said, I'm the stats guy.
Okay. All right.
I'm the captain now.
Look at me. Look at me. I'm going to get out of here now. Ben, there were 15 will you get out of here's this season. Final tally. Final answer. Lock it in.
Lock the gates.
Our last overall stat before I get into my final rankings is music. Overall, there was 291.55 minutes of music out of 632.42 minutes of show, which means there was music 46.1% of the time. It's a lot of music. It's not quite half. It's a lot. Last season, 41%.
So it went up slightly,
but
not significantly.
5%.
That's actually more significant than I thought.
It's not significant, but it's not nothing.
What is 5% of 600 minutes and change? You can take a second to calculate.
30.
30 minutes?
Yep. Because 10% would be 60.
So it's an episode's worth more of music.
Yeah, that seems pretty significant, yeah, actually.
I'm glad we took a time to correct me and calculate that out then.
Yeah, technically more than an episode, since the average length of an episode is 26.47 minutes.
Right.
And finally, rankings. Should I go top to bottom or bottom to top?
You did bottom to top last time.
Okay. 24, Bob Hope.
Cue what? Cards, baby.
Yeah. Oof. Oh, right. So, sorry. 25, Bruce Schwartz.
Now, I know that you did this bit, and I think it's hilarious, but I want to mention that according to production episode 7, Charlie McCarthy was also a separate guest from Edgar Bergen.
I like Charlie McCarthy more than I like Bruce Schwartz.
So does that make Bruce Schwartz 26?
Yeah.
And Charlie 25?
No.
Charlie's in the mix there somewhere.
Yeah, we'll figure that out as we go.
Okay.
25, Bob Hope. 24, Judy Collins. This is going to really mess me up.
I could strike it from the record.
You're absolutely right. 23, Lou Rawls. 22, Zero Mostel. 21, Cleo Lane. 20, Rudolf Nureyev. 19, Don Knotts. 18, Charlie McCarthy. 17, Steve Martin.
That's hilarious, by the way. A ventriloquist dummy is only slightly less good of a guest than Steve Martin.
I thought about putting him above Edgar Bergen because I think I did like him more than Edgar Bergen.
Yeah, you didn't like Edgar Bergen.
No. But as soon as I got there, I was like, no, Steve Martin's better than the dummy.
But only barely. Steve, I hope that warms you tonight when you go to sleep.
Hey, next week could change my tune.
Sure enough.
Probably won't. 16, Edgar Bergen. 15, Teresa Brewer. 14, George Burns. 13, Petula Clark. 12, Elton John. 11, Nancy Walker. 10, Rich Little. 9, Cloris Leachman. 8, Julie Andrews. 7, Madeline Kahn. 6, Dom DeLuise. 5, Milton Berle. 4, J.P. Morgan. 3, Bernadette Peters. 2, John Cleese. And number 1, Peter Sellers. All of this seems wild to me.
It should do. Anybody who made that list is a crazy person.
I don't remember most of these people. Pressed, I wouldn't be able to tell you a single thing any of these people did.
I love it. There's nothing that makes me happier on this podcast than you invalidating your own results. If there's a purpose to posting lists on the internet, it's to generate controversy. And for you to pre-generate that controversy by undermining yourself is dessert.
I stand by all of these rankings.
You shouldn't do.
I cannot tell you why. Listen, the reason why this is so wild to me is because the only thing I remember from the Peter Sellers episode is racism. Mm. And I rated that number 1.
Yeah.
It's truly wild.
But at the time, because this was only a couple of episodes ago, mm-hmm. you were like, yeah, he's really great. I love what he did. The characters were a lot of fun. And I understand that some of the stuff he did was problematic, but he was really entertaining. And the only thing that stayed with you is the problematic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm a wild man. I live by the seat of my pants, but I also commit to my choices. Whether I can justify them or not, I'll find justifications for them.
I'm saying I understand that one of your first fandoms was being an advocate of the early movies of Christopher Nolan, and yet you are literally living a scenario where you should have taken photographs of why you made the decisions you made because...
And don't think I'm not laughing hysterically on the fact that you can't pull the name Memento.
What are you talking about? I could have done that instantly. It's not like I was talking around it.
Ben, who is Sammy Jenkins?
I don't know. I've never heard that name before in my life.
Maybe he's a guest star next season and I'll rank him then.
Never forget.
Oh, right. He's season 9, episode 11.
And in the UK, he aired on November 9th. As always, we end each episode focusing on our fave bits, 5 of which we're going to choose out of the vast supply of all the things we could talk about. So we're going to drag ourselves back from overall season-long statistics to focus back on this episode for our outro of the season. I'm going to begin by linking to some of the conversations we just had about verbal tics and bits.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of times this season, I have mentioned the fact that Fozzie has a tendency to use the phrase, hoo-ha.
Mm.
It first showed up as a weird tic in the Lena Horne episode, where I thought that was a strange phrase that nobody has ever used, and that it has shown up since in Frank-based characters. And it was still particularly weird to hear Piggy say it in this episode when she's talking to Kermit the Pig. When he says, pigs are taking over the show, unlike the way Fozzie has used it in the past as a way of getting somebody's attention, she says, hoo-ha, what about the frog? She uses it as a way of dismissing whatever he's talking about. So linguistically, it's a completely new development of the phrase, and I'm fascinated.
Oh, wait, we pigs have taken over the show. Well, hoo-ha, where's my frog, huh?
It's definitely not a writer's bit. There's no chance whatsoever that Bailey is writing hoo-ha into the scripts. This is one of Frank's filler tics. And it just works its way into his various characters' conversations. So maybe it will come back to haunt us. Maybe it will become a verb. I don't know. But it leapt out at me with great joy to have it come back the final episode of this season.
For my first moment, our second moment, you just talked about something that Fozzie usually does, but Fozzie didn't do this episode. Mm. And I would like to do the same. And I'm going to talk about Fozzie Pig. At the end of his set, when he closes it, says he's got to get out of here, instead of saying, waka, waka, waka,
Because Fozzie has never said waka waka waka.
Not to this point.
That's right.
He says haga haga haga. And I have been a long stan of waka waka waka. I wrote a series of waka 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 jokes maybe 10 years ago.
But also, in this season, when talking about Nancy Walker, you put forward the theory that we should use time travel to establish that is the reason why Fozzie starts saying waka 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 in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, it is not yet canon that Fozzie uses that phrase.
Yeah, does Fozzie Bear steal this joke from Fozzie Pig?
So he comes on saying hiya, 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 mm-hmm. which is exactly how Fozzie tends to come on. So Haga feels like he's just doing a pig version of Haya.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. But he's also leaving, so he can't say Haya.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're not wrong. It's a short leap to get to Waka from Haga. Who is Fozzie Pig?
Jerry Nelson.
So that in and of itself is wacky.
Uh-huh.
That Frank might take a tick from his imposter.
Mm-hmm.
So in character, it's weird. And behind the scenes, it's weird.
And I love it.
The countdown to Fozzie actually saying waka 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 is getting closer all the time.
It has to be. And guess what? It's going to be one of my moments when it finally gets here.
For my second moment, our third moment, the median moment, I'm going to talk about another moment with one of the imposters. When Cloris is arguing with Kermit the Pig,
mm-hmm.
there is a fantastic piece of circular logic and absurdity that the writers placed in, which is Kermit, being a great stage manager,
the best.
No matter what form he's in,
mm-hmm.
is trying to be as accommodating as possible for the guests, even though it's not backstage. It's in front of the curtain, in front of the audience, and she's coming out and challenging his authority. As a accommodating, fantastic stage manager, he is bending like a willow. And he says, you don't like your dress? And she says, no, it's okay for the number that I'm doing. And he says, well, you don't like the number? She says, no, it's okay for the dress that I'm wearing. And I'm glad they didn't just do that three more times. But I like the fact that they could have. That was such a good joke. And I applaud the writers for channeling a certain kind of maybe British, maybe just politeness where you don't want to make trouble or waves. And it was just an Ouroboros of, no, that's fine.
For my second moment, our fourth moment, my final moment.
Of the season.
I am going to talk about a different language-based joke. And it's another Jerry Nelson joke. So take that, Frank. You've gotten your day in the spotlight with me. Today it's Jerry's turn. Which is as the announcer for Vets Hospital, which actually we said may not have been Jerry Nelson.
Is typically Jerry Nelson. But we think it's a different voice here.
Or maybe it's him doing a different voice because there's no one else credited as announcer this episode except Jerry, which is why I assumed it was Jerry. It's Richard as Dr. Pig, Louise as Nurse Pig, Frank as Fozzie, Dave is not credited, and neither is Jim. So I think maybe he just put an affectation on, maybe.
And now, Vegetarian's Hospital, the story of a pig-headed quack who's gone hog wild.
Or, like the Wikia claiming that the classic operetta was New Moob, they just didn't have the correct information.
It's true. So the announcer says in the closing of Vegetarian's Hospital, and so, once again, for the first time, we come to the close of Vegetarian's Hospital.
It's exactly your kind of joke.
Yeah.
Much in the way in which you were like, yeah, perfect record in Vegetarian's Hospital. They 100% had a vegetable on the table.
Yeah. They did everything perfectly in that moment. Because if they didn't say for the first time, if they just said, and what now once again, I would be like, quibble, sir. Glasses up on bridge of nose. Excuse me.
I think you'll find.
This is the first time it's been Vegetarian's Hospital, and they got my ass. They saw me coming a mile away. And they're like, oh, we got you, Pete. 45 years later, you're punching up our jokes. Ah, we'll get you this time. There's no punching up this perfect joke.
For the final moment of the season, my third moment, tertiary moment, because three is a magic number. In the final scene in front of the curtain, when Kermie and Cloris Leachman are using hog calls to distract the pigs.
That's three.
But the reason why it's not three is I had two more written and I forgot to include them.
Oh, jeez.
I had one for every one of Cloris's appearances. I want to talk about her delivery of the line.
Where did those pigs come from?
And where did they go? I mean, who would organize a hog calling contest? It was amazing. It was bizarre.
It was easy.
Is so good. I mean, she played the operetta stuff perfectly straight. She played the stuff on the island successfully over the top. But here, she brings solid actorly line delivery to three words in a way that is completely unnecessary. But when you play a Stratosvarius, you can't help but produce gorgeous tones.
Yep.
And she throws that line away with such fantastic subtlety and nuance.
And especially because right before that, when Kermit is saying, it was amazing, it was bizarre, she's acting surprised. And then, yeah, she, talk about a little twist, comes in with the reveal of it was her all along.
And it is the best deadpan joke that maybe this show has seen. And she's phenomenal at it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we often talk about our favorite moments are based on the regulars, but I did not want to pass up an opportunity to say maybe one of the best actresses that's ever been on this show ended this show with masterclass in bringing it on a show that doesn't require people to bring it.
Mm-hmm. Me and Cloris Leachman gonna hold hands and skip into the sunset?
Doesn't scan.
Nope. If I didn't do sunset, if I just ended with sun, it would.
Skip towards the hur. No, that doesn't work.
Anyway, it was a bad idea for me to try and do that improv. And that's why I've gotten out of improv then.
Yeah, well, I will point out that while the me and Cloris Leachman lines that are delivered on Pistol Shrimps Radio all were improv, mine were carefully written in advance. Here's one I didn't do. Link and Cloris Leachman taking ages without any jokes.
This episode of The Henson Perspective was researched, performed, and edited by Ben Russell and Pete Russell. Sound design such as it is, also by the two of us.
Our logo is based on designs by Leon Amble. Thank you, Liana. Music in the episode comes from archive.org and Henson Associate clips of Silver and Cones, Yes, We Have No Bananas, under what we hope is transformative fair use, much as the Henson did when they first broadcast to Sam and Friends.
You can find us at firstperspective.com and follow us on Twitter at First Name Basis. This podcast, as conceived of by Nathan, Emily, and Ben Russell, is an intellectual exploration of the lasting power of comedic phenomena.
All excerpts in the podcast are used for the purposes of review. There are things, dates, facts, names, comic timing, or data of any kind that you feel is incorrect. Please contact us via the website and we'll post it to our errata page on firstperspective.com as soon as possible.
Again, our discussion is purely in the name of academic interest and contributing to the common conversation. I'm Pete, my co-host is Ben.
Worst! Weird! Worst! Weird!
And we'll see you in September when we discuss Season 3, Production Episode 13, guest starring Helen Reddy. Ah! I believe I was falling off a cliff there.
Yeah, do you want to do it more like he does it?
And now, once again, our special guest, Miss Cloris Leachman. Ah!
Ah!